From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, and happy Veterans Day to all of you who have served our great nation. This program tonight is dedicated to all of you and those of you of your family members who have served who are no longer with us. Here's what's happening. Protests held in several cities Friday for a third night since Donald Trump was elected president, while marchers blocking major road races now in Miami and hundreds gathering in Atlanta, Boston, New York, and other cities. Back in Portland, Oregon, volunteers came out to clean up after some in a crowd protesters damaged cars at a dealership and broke the windows of local businesses. 26 people arrested in Portland Thursday night in what police declared a riot that involved damage to the cars and businesses and objects being tossed at police. Police said they used less lethal munitions like pepper spray and rubber baton rounds there, but the situation still kind of out of control in some cities across this country. Dr. John Curtis is the editor of OnlineColumnist.com. John, these protests, why don't they give the guy a chance to rule first, huh?
Well, you know, I can't think of anything more un-American, anti-American, than to stage the protests after the election. Why didn't they stage these protests before the election? These are carefully orchestrated anarchists. We've seen them in Black Lives Matter. We've seen them in, you know, Occupy Wall Street. We've seen them at different times. These are not spontaneous protests, George. These are carefully orchestrated, the same kind of violence that is stemming from the Clinton campaign. Because think about this. I mean, Hillary's concession speech essentially said, we want to give Donald Trump a chance. Okay? Where's Hillary? Where's Obama?
I know.
Why aren't they coming public and stating to these protests that our constitutional republic has voted in a fair and free election? And the verdict was, we selected Donald Trump. This is not the time to protest. And Hillary needs to say it. And Obama needs to say it. I mean, it was Obama basically that told these protesters that we have a broken criminal justice system, implying that police officers around the country have a problem with racism. And what happened? You saw the massacre in Dallas. You saw open shooting, basically hunting on police officers around the country. And when you have leadership like that, I mean, you're going to have problems, but let there be no mistake. These protests are carefully orchestrated anarchists that are out there manipulating crowds, and that's what you've got.
Well, and did you also notice, John, they're all young kids, too, what we see, at least. And some of them say they voted, some of them have not. In protesting is one thing. Smashing windows, breaking business windows, that's something else. And I'm glad they're getting arrested.
No, absolutely. I mean, because what's the purpose of a violent protest, looting, targeting businesses, when these people that are joining these protests are essentially being drawn in? You know what happens in, you know, the crowd mentality when you have riots?
Oh my gosh!
I mean, it's mass hysteria that goes on, and the irony of it is that these people don't know anything about Trump. This is all propaganda that came. I mean, what you have to give Hillary credit for is, and John Podesta, is the most extreme demonization that has ever happened in any, at least, election that I've ever covered, and that's a long time. We've never seen this kind of pernicious propaganda. He's a racist. He's a sexist. He's a misogynist. He's every demonized element that you could ever hope for, when none of it is really true. Because Trump, if you remember, during the Republican primaries, what was he demonized for by his own party? That he's not conservative enough. He's too much of a New York liberal. Well, what more could any Democrat want than a Republican who's going to govern like a liberal?
John, I hope they stop. Dr. John Curtis. And President-elect Trump has said in an interview that he is open to leaving intact some key parts of President Barack Obama's health care bill. Mr. Trump, who pledged repeatedly to repeal the 2010 law, signaled he was receptive to a compromise after visiting the White House on Thursday. He told the Wall Street Journal he favors two parts of the bill. He says, I like them very much. One is a ban on insurers denying coverage for pre-existing conditions. In the other provision, he said he favors allowing young adults to be insured on their parents' policies as they get a little later on in life. In Pennsylvania, authorities say seven people have been taken to the hospital after a knife attack at a mental health facility near Pittsburgh. Everybody seems to be healing. Some Facebook users received an unsettling shock Friday when an unexplained glitch caused the social networking service to post a notice that implied that they were dead. A number of Facebook users reported that their profile page on the social network was topped with a message that referred to them by name as if they were gone. Kind of scary to open up your Facebook page and see that you are dead. Actor Robert Vaughn, best known for playing Napoleon Solo on the NBC spy drama The Man from U.N.C.L.E., has died surrounded by his family after battling acute leukemia. He was 83 years old. I loved watching that show. A gigantic piece of space debris has crashed to Earth after falling from the sky over Burma. They think it was a rocket from China. What else is in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter.
Well, good evening, George, and there's lots going on. You're right. It's been a very active week, and I'm really looking forward to presenting some of these cases I have to our audience tonight. I'd like to preface, however, by expressing my gratitude and thanks to all the veterans who are listening tonight. It's an important contribution to our way of life, and I'd like to thank them for all their hard work and the risk they take and the inconvenience and everything else. So lots going on. I'd like to start with a report that came in two nights ago. This is a doozy, George, and I don't know how many people listening in the audience go to our website, but if they look at only one report, this is the report that I would like to direct them to. Two nights ago, a young woman, I can describe her only as a legal specialist, is about as far as I can go, was driving in the city of Spokane, not far from where I live. She was up on the south hill of Spokane. This is just 2 miles south of Interstate 90. And she was driving to the east on a main thoroughfare. She looked up ahead of her and she saw a very large, very bright array of lights. At first she thought they were stadium lights, but she's lived in the area for almost two decades. She said, no, that can't be a stadium. She continued on for a block or more and had the presence of mind to bring her car to a complete stop. She got out and then she realized what she was looking at. She describes a huge black triangular craft. She estimated that it was a block long.
Wow.
About 180 feet long, maybe 90 feet wide. These are estimated dimensions, of course. And it had an array of white lights all the way around the periphery of the triangle. She said in her report, which is posted to our website now, she's never seen anything quite as bright as that object. The interesting thing is, as she stood there looking at this object directly above her head, George, a car came from the east, going the other direction from her car, and it went right underneath. She could tell that the driver of that second car was looking up. He could see the object, and he kept going.
I would too, maybe. I'd go.
Probably a good decision on his part, but I'm curious to know what that individual must have been thinking as he looked up at that triangle. Very, very interesting report. I've talked to the source of the report on two occasions. Rock solid as a source of information. You can tell immediately from her report that it's very well written, very eloquent. I conclude one of my comments in the conclusion to her report is that she's probably a very highly credible and reliable witness. Very interesting report. Last night, something equally interesting. Euless, Texas, just southwest of Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, a gentleman with four roughly 4 decades of experience in the airline industry, a private pilot, was standing outdoors looking to the northern sky from his home in Euless. He saw a white light approaching him. He at first thought it was a landing light, decided that couldn't be correct. At that point, the object just stopped dead in the sky. Within a few seconds, it turned to a vermilion red, and he was quite surprised by that because he was looking at the side of the aircraft that should have had a green light on it. Then, equally quickly, the object turned purple, and it suddenly accelerated to the east and disappeared from his sight. Very, very interesting report. The final report I'd like to present comes from Kaiser, Oregon, just about 30 or 40 miles south of Portland. A young, I believe a woman, I'm not sure of the gender, was sitting in her wheelchair. She's incapacitated. Suddenly her wheelchair started vibrating and she heard a tremendous sonic boom-like sound emanating from the ground. She could tell the direction the object was going as it moved across the sky, but she could see nothing that would explain the sound. Very, very interesting report, the type of report that Linda Howe and I have been talking about now for many months or even years. If anybody in the Kaiser or Salem area might have experienced that, I'd like to invite them to go to our website and submit a report. So lots going on. I'm looking forward to the super moon on, I think it's Sunday night, if I'm not
Monday night. Monday night the 14th.
Monday night. A bit of sentimentality there. The last one to occur, George, ironically, occurred in the month of my birth in St. Louis, Missouri, January 1948. So I'm looking forward to this one.
You got it. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, a special Veterans Day tribute. Danyon Brinkley joins us, and something special for those of you who served in the armed forces, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and we have the multifaceted Danyon Brinkley with us. Danyon, of course, his book, The Secrets of the Light, Saved by the Light, At Peace in the Light. He's been struck by lightning several times, and he has survived to talk about it. But tonight, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But he also heads up the Twilight Brigade, which is set up to help veterans all across this planet. And it's always a pleasure and a tradition here on Coast to Coast to welcome Danyon Brinkley on Veterans Day. Danyon, once again, thank you for everything you do.
Yeah, but, you know, come on, George. This is our 18th year, 18 years. And it's a gift. You know, it's like when you were talking about the book. This is just following something that happened in 1975 and to fulfill what I believe was my mission. So when you take a good look at the VA, the largest healthcare system, it's the largest healthcare system in America. And what's wrong with everything else can be looked at in where the veterans, from the DOD to the veterans issues, come up. And it's like a microcosm of where healthcare is and how it operates. So it's important that on this day, as we look at veterans and we look at what their options are and what the crisis are in it, that it helps people reaffirm that the possibility of change is there. Just with what the president-elect kept saying and what he talked about, George, here is that opportunity for us to look at the issues and look at what's wrong and also complement what's right and move forward. Yeah. And what I always thought, George, because I deal with palliative and end-of-life care, I get to see what works and what doesn't work. I get to listen to the stories of what these guys talk about, and some I know 5 and 6 years as they go through what's community living program or palliative care. And I develop relationships, and some I know only a couple of hours. But I get to know their families and what they're dealing with and the kind of issues that are really moving, that for once, for the first time in a long time, we have a chance to force this issue, put veterans forward, because the greatness of a nation is how you take care of your helpless and how you take care of your veterans. And I don't think we're doing near as well as we can.
You know, you remind me a little bit of Danny Thomas. When he was down and out, Danyon, he made a pledge to St. Jude that he'd build a hospital, and if things turned around for him, and they did. Now, you're not down and out, but you have basically made a pledge to devote your life to the veterans, and you're doing it.
Yeah, 32 32,000 hours at the bedside, probably 50,000 hours in programs. I've been with 210 people going from this world to the next world. I've been with 343 people taking their last breath. And I'm the CEO of the Twilight Brigade. And I know where they're going, George. You know, that's the legend of Danyon. I know where they're going.
Yeah,
and it makes
do.
It easy for me to deal with it and create programming that can effectively make a difference in the lives of people. Everybody's going to be a hospice volunteer sooner or later. And the more you know about it, the more powerful and the better you can handle these issues. So I'm just watching the VA and how it's unfolding and how healthcare is unfolding and where the Twilight Brigade will go next.
Danyon, the VA has been getting slammed for its treatment of vets. They've been getting slammed for not getting to vets soon enough, where some of them have died waiting to get appointments and things like that. How do you react to that?
I can't stand it. And it's not people, George. It's not people. It's the culture. This culture is from the 40s and the 50s.
Yeah.
Okay, I watch it. It's bureaucracy. And you have to start from the bottom. I see all the billions of dollars they throw at it, but they're still doing the same thing. My little crowd at the West Los Angeles VA is doing a lot better. I mean, they walked into the worst situation that they could possibly find. And because they're young and enthusiastic, Director Brown and Associate Director Weeks and Associate Director of Patient Care, which is James Doling. These are the people at the West Los Angeles VA that walked into this, and it was breathtaking what they were finding, just like in Phoenix, like in San Antonio, like at Hines, all these problems that sit that are culturally perspective. So when I take a good look at it, you look at the keys of what's got to happen in order to change the culture to make it more efficient and more effective for veterans, because right now, today, they threw billions of dollars. Right now, today, they're still erasing and deleting. There's 1.2 million in the backlog. You know, and these guys are suffering, and these ladies are suffering, and they're out there, and many of them are in the system, and it's still crazy, George.
Why don't we get out of the hospital business as a nation and merely let these people go, let these vets go to hospitals and get great service from doctors and the hospitals, and the government pick up the tab?
Well, that's their goal.
We should be doing that. We don't need to own hospitals as a government.
Yeah, but you know something, George? There, I have two places there. I'm agreeing with you in one place. But where a veteran comes in, especially combat, there's a unique set of events that occurs, most like with PTSD, which is a moral dilemma. It's morality.
Yes, right.
That most civilians cannot deal with. They don't have a methodology to deal with it. Okay, so I am for 51. If you're 51 miles or further, you can go to any hospital and they will bitch and complain and whine. But the goal is to eliminate the VA, to eliminate it and create the Canadian model of the British model.
And you'd be in favor of that?
No.
You would not?
No.
Okay.
And let me tell you why, George. Because then the bureaucracy structures its system to control their life. And it won't take into consideration the unique problems that veterans develop. Now, I think in a 50-year span, as we move away from war and we change the culture, I believe it's highly possible. You know, it's highly possible, but not in the next 20 years, not in my lifetime.
All right. When we come back, we're going to, of course, have a little treat for you veterans. Danyon will be with us as we continue chatting about his work with the Twilight Brigade. That website, by the way, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll take calls next hour with Danyon as well. And, of course, we definitely want to talk with him about Saved by the Light. What's it like to get hit by lightning several times and come back to talk about it? Later on in the program, of course, tonight, open lines, those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. So wherever you may be, driving in a truck, in a car, you're in bed, you're at home, wherever you are, just hang in there to listen to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. In spite of the things you hear, sometimes in spite of the things you see, you are still living in the greatest country on the planet, bar none. I love our Canadian neighbors, but I was born in the United States. Served 9 years with the United States Navy, and I'm proud of it. And over the history of this country, millions of men and women have served, continue to serve, have given their lives so that you can have freedom. As a tradition here at Coast to Coast, a little thank you, a little tribute to those of you who have served, wherever you may be, in heaven or still with us. And we begin by thanking those of you who served in the Army. About that for the Army, and of course now the Navy. And by the way, I'm also dedicating part of this song to my dear friend who was a commander with me when I was a lieutenant many years ago, Admiral Nathan Jones. But those of you who served in the Navy, thank you. I still get chills listening to that one. The Marines, okay, they just celebrated their 241st birthday. Thank you, Marines. Of course, whenever there's a problem off our shores, who do we call for help? The Coast Guard. And of course, who watches our skies, protecting us, the Air Force? We'll be right back. I just got an email from Bill in Omaha, a tough Marine who is bawling his eyes out listening to this. How about that? Let's bring Danyon back in. Danyon, that sends chills up my spine. How about you?
Me too, George.
Wow.
I mean, we're still out here, you know, and I get thrills when I listen to those songs. And, you know, I get a chance to listen to so many guys tell their stories. And one more Marine out there, you know, we hear that call. And this is that challenge, George, like in our 18th year of the campaign, we have to come together and apply pressure in those places that, based on what Trump said, President-elect Trump said, we have to, as a nation and as veterans, put pressure to accomplish the goals of what he said about his first 100 days. I think that this is the power of what...
It's powerful. It really is powerful. Danyon, I want to bring in Sean Murphy. Sean is a hospice volunteer with your Twilight Brigade. Hi. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program, and thank you.
George, it's good to be here. Good evening.
Tell me, how'd you get involved with the Twilight Brigade?
I got involved, George, from a bit of a journey from studying theology at Notre Dame to becoming a knight in the Order of Malta and meeting Danyon and really being put to the challenge to come be at the bedside of veterans. And I took Danyon up on the challenge, and to say the least, it's changed my life, being able to serve veterans at the bedside.
What is that one story, Sean, that you will never forget based on your involvement with the Twilight Brigade?
Gosh, George, there's been so many. The one that comes to mind is just one from today, actually, at the VA. It's being with a veteran that he's alone. He has no friends, he has no family, he was homeless and got picked up, came into the VA, and as a Twilight Brigader, we're it. I'm the guy that shows up to be the one that comes and visits him. I'm the only one, and it's moments like that. There's so many small stories that are moving, but just today, as a Twilight Brigader, I was the guy that was there to be there for him when no one else was.
Good for you. And since you've been doing this, what changes have you seen since the Congress decided to pour billions into the VA? What have you been seeing?
I haven't seen any changes, really, George. I see some really wonderful nurses that come into the rooms and that are part of the healthcare team, but I also probably see a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of change that can happen, and I think there's a lot of progress and probably some modernizing that can really happen in the VA.
Well, Sean, thank you for your volunteer work, and you're one in a million, my friend, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, George, and God bless all veterans this evening.
Sean,
thank you.
How many people like that, Danyon, do you have?
We're pushing 7,000, but like Sean's a millennial, and he came into the game after going to Notre Dame and theology and looking at how it and what it all really means. And it's captured his whole life, and it's begun to form and move in directions that make me really proud in the way the Twilight Brigade is and what it does and how it changes people's lives. And it's the reduction of the fear of death and the empowerment of looking at who you are and what this life is about. But George, I want to correct something that I said earlier. When we were talking about getting rid of the VA, if you're 51 miles away from the VA, then every veteran should be able to go, and this is a law, can go to any hospital, and the VA or the DOD picks up the tab.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
that's what I meant.
I got it, but I support that because I see what's going to happen. I watch the RAND studies. The RAND comes in and does studies, and based on me looking up and knowing where to find those studies, in order to make affordable health care work, which was the goal, you would have to sooner or later merge the VAs into the affordable health care system because it's the largest one. And when they passed the law that said that if you had 100% coverage in the VA, that wasn't enough coverage, so you had to have affordable health care insurance. The key is getting rid of insurance companies and create that kind of competition. But in the VA, it's a complete culture that has to be changed because all that stuff that starts at the top, George, it never gets to the person who's really doing the work because I live among them. You know, I sit and listen to guys, and like you said, it's the joy in my life to be able to help them and to help people deal with it. But I get a chance to see guys coming out of alcohol and drug abuse and all the problems that come with serving in the military.
Yeah.
You know what's scary, George? 45% of the 1.6 million veterans who served in the Middle Eastern conflicts have applied for disability claims.
That much?
45,
wow.
Almost half. And it's disability claims. Some lost limbs, but more importantly, it's the psychological damage done. And I think it comes from, George, from listening to them when they realize what they thought they were fighting for. It's two things a guy told me, what he thought he was fighting for when he signed up and what he realized he was fighting for was heartbreaking. And second, what happens when you realize what you're doing is not some heroic cause, and then what happens in the course of combat and quote-unquote the fog of war, you commit atrocities. And I listen to guys from Vietnam, Korea, from Afghanistan and Iraq, and when you start to look at what is happening and the system cannot drug someone to safety, we have to turn toward complementary and integrative therapies and interdisciplinary policies, which is what Dr. Scott Sreed and Dr. Tom Eads in palliative and long-term care, George, they're really taking serious palliative and end-of-life care, which is my area.
Are they on cutting edge right now?
They're as good as you get. And this new telemedicine programs, they have to update the equipment. But we live in a quantum world, George, where you can measure, you can wrap a band around you and look at an iris, and you can do voice analysis, and you can have a little unit at home that you can check your stuff and get a doctor to check it in the telemedicine program.
Yes.
And it's unbelievable, the potential, but the culture has to change.
Yeah, it really does. Are we still having any after effects of the Gulf War syndrome?
Oh, yes. We probably got 700,000 guys that still arguing with, now that Gulf War syndrome and Agent Orange have been accepted as...
It took long enough, didn't it?
Well, 20 years, because for Agent Orange, most of the stuff other than diabetes didn't show up for 20 years, and now we have 7 cancers. All these things that took years and years to develop. And then when you look at Afghanistan and Iraq, you look at Gulf War syndrome, that's vaccinations, depleted uranium. You know, look at how many kids in Iraq have birth defects. I mean, you're talking,
it's incredible. The numbers
probably
so
20-30% because it's depleted uranium, you know, and oil burning and the vaccinations that some got. But you have to look at, you know, what kind of weapons how we use those weapons. But you know what's important is if we focus on the VA as the place where we pull ourselves together, we put pressure on this administration in its first 100 days to take a good solid look at the culture from the 40s and 50s and bring it into the 2000s. And these people keep doing the same stuff, George. They don't change. I mean, I like my West Los Angeles VA because I see innovation, but I see 11 other VAs, and they don't change. The trickle-down effect does not work, so you have to start from the bottom up.
If Donald Trump means what he said during his campaign, he'll work to start fixing that, so we'll watch that happen too. Dan, you don't want to talk with you about Saved by the Light when we come back, plus we have an hour of phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.